Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strikeout, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, soccer with some late game drama, not once, but twice. The defending Sun Belt champion volleyball team getting set to open up the regular season. Cross country is opening the season this weekend. But it's week one of the football season. Red Wolves will open the season at home this Saturday as they host SEMO with kickoff at 6 o'clock. We'll talk all about that coming up a little bit later on, but our guest today is a former A-State great who still pays very close attention to his Red Wolves. We want to welcome him in right now. Hello, Taylor Stockamer.
Hey, Matt. Hey, everybody. I appreciate you having me on.
Great to have you with us. Has it really been 13 years since your career ended?
Please don't remind me that that number gets larger and larger every year, and it's tougher to hear. I still cherish those times and think about them often.
It doesn't. I mean, that is crazy to think, because, I mean, it really seems like it's easy for us to say, because I know you feel that way, Stock, but it really does seem like you were just running around that field the other day.
Yeah, I wish I still had the ability that I did back then, but I think mentally I do. Physically, it's long past me.
All right, I'm going to read you some numbers here. And look, we've had a lot of great receivers come through here, and a lot of great receivers have come here since you left, but you're still 10th all-time with 129 receptions, 7th in receiving yards with a little over 2,100, and 5th in receiving touchdowns with 16. So I know you take a lot of pride in that, but how much higher on the list would you be without all the injuries that you had to play through?
You know, that's tough to say. I also played with a lot of other great receivers in my time, with Dwayne Frampton, Josh Jarboe, Alan Muse, Brandon Tompkins, Jabari McLennan. We had quite the crew throughout my tenure there. I truly believe our numbers were partly in a circumstance of we finally started throwing the ball. I know Arkansas State had such a rich tradition of running the football. And so when Freeze got there and we opened it up a little bit, I think we tended to benefit from that. But injuries definitely played into probably lack of production in parts of it. My senior year, got knocked out within the first quarter of the Oregon game and didn't really fully come back until the Western Kentucky game, and I wasn't quite healthy then. It took a little bit to get back into playing shape there, and I know I had a little bit of a dust up in 2010 when we went and played Troy, got rolled up on pretty badly. I don't know if this was widely known, but once I got hurt in Troy, I never practiced the rest of the season. I would just play the games all the way through, Florida International being the last game.
And the truth is, like, he really felt better the next week, but he's like, I got a good thing going here. If they're going to let me just play in the games, I'm riding this thing out.
That was everybody's dream.
Let's hear the story. I mean, you're an in-state kid. You played at Van Buren. What do you remember about the recruiting process? How did Steve Roberts get you to Arkansas State?
That's quite an interesting story. You know, I was actually talked into playing football by one of my high school teammates. I was fairly good at track at the time, and he said, man, you really need to try and come play football. I joined about the 8th or 9th grade, had no idea what a first down was, didn't know anything about the game. We ran the wishbone, which, for those who don't know, you don't throw the ball in the wishbone. It's pure running. And so I was out there and having a good time with my friends. Lo and behold, as a sophomore, I ended up starting at receiver and did fairly well once we somewhat transitioned to the spread offense. We still ran the option, but out of the spread. And I began receiving letters from colleges, and I kind of looked at it and thought, well, you know, what is this? And then as the process began and I became more productive on the field, it became more serious. And so got letters from all over schools, went to camps, started to really enjoy the process. And then my senior year, I sustained an injury during summer camps that kept me out the first 3 games, I believe. And then when I came back, I got injured again, which put me out the remaining 4 games. And I thought at that point, my hopes of playing college football were gone. But luckily, Coach Gunn, David Gunn, and Steve Roberts stayed there with me and I guess saw something that I maybe not even saw myself and gave me the opportunity to play in college. And, you know, it was between ASU and a couple of other schools that were out of state, Kansas being one of them, Air Force being another, talks with Ole Miss. But I really enjoyed what I saw at ASU. I really believed that there was a development there, and you know, it helped being somewhat close to home. It was roughly about 4 hours away, but closer than the other schools. And so I decided to take a shot at Arkansas State.
What is it about Coach Roberts and that staff? Because you said, you know, those guys, not only they stuck with you, but they saw something maybe you didn't see. And man, that's a common tale in that era where they weren't going out and out recruiting the world for guys. They went out and found a bunch of you guys and developed you into players we're still talking about. What's the secret sauce for that staff?
You know, I've always wondered that. I believe that Coach Roberts had an eye for talent that was second to none. He could go find the Tyrell Johnsons of the world, the Ben Owens of the world, the Ryan Applins of the world, and bring them to a school and fundamentally developed all of these great players. I mean, for years he had a draft pick, and most often it was a guy that no one's ever heard of or somebody that flew under the radar. You know, David Johnson, Orrin O'Neal, people like Tyrell Johnson came out of small rural town in Arkansas and became second round draft pick. And all of these players that were seemingly overlooked, he had the ability to evaluate somebody based on their high school tape or a camp and really find true players.
Yeah, and one of the guys that you mentioned was Ryan Applin. Most people associate Ryan Applin and Taylor Stockamer together. So let's talk about that relationship. Do you remember the first time that you met App, and what was it that made that connection so special?
Oh, he would kill me if he heard what I was about to say, but I do. I do remember everybody getting together when we were finally there for our first fall camp in 2008. We were all destined to be redshirted that year, and I remember we brought in Andre Smith as well. And Andre was a bit, at the time, seemingly to me, was more of a runner than Ryan was. Found that not to be true throughout our later years, but I saw him. He had the build of a high school basketball player, and I thought, wow, okay. But then every time he took snaps, he would make plays. And then I remember our spring of 2009, he continually made plays. Now, he was behind Corey Leonard, who was very heralded at the time. So he was always running with the twos or the threes. But every time, regardless of how poor the person he was throwing to, albeit me, he just continually made plays. And then when he finally got his opportunity in 2009, I mean, we all saw what he did from years on. He's an incredible player. You know, we were friends off the field. That helped a lot, developed a strong relationship there. I still talk to him frequently. I still go visit him and watch some of his games where he coaches now. And I think having that bond, it helped on the field. Maybe I don't want to say a safety blanket. I wasn't a safety blanket, but there is a bit of trust there. I can recite some plays over the years that specifically one in the bowl game on the fourth down, he threw a touchdown where he just grabbed it and he was under pressure and he just threw it up. I'm not sure that was the wisest decision to make, but it turned out to work in our favor at that moment.
I'll say safety blanket. It's fine. You don't say it. Quarterbacks have that guy. They know where their comfort zone is. When the heat's on, I'm just going to throw it toward this guy, and something's usually going to happen.
We had a really good relationship. There was a certain play in Gus Malzahn's offense that maybe I wasn't the best at running the route, but he knew exactly where I was going to be, and I knew exactly where he was going to throw it. And it was almost unstoppable to a certain extent. And it worked. And it was just a building of that relationship. You know, when you get to catch from somebody for 5 years, you develop quite the rapport.
I want to get into the turnaround of this program here in just a minute. But this time of year, I always think of the warmer weather. And when I think of hot football games early in the season, I always think of that 2010 game in Lafayette. I remember you scored a 65-yard touchdown in that game, but for whatever reason, they decided to play that game in the middle of the afternoon.
I can tell you.
I remember just everybody on our sideline hooked up on IVs, including you, right?
That is correct, yes.
How miserable was that day?
That was probably one of the hottest days I've ever felt in my entire life. It was absolutely miserable. Hard to explain. I mean, I don't know if you all have seen Tyler Siski's podcast. He actually briefly mentions that game one time. We had players whose cleats were melting. We had mouthpieces. I don't know if you noticed, but like when they hit the ground, they would melt. It was insanely hot. I actually had three IVs that game, and our team doctor told me afterwards, after I began to cramp again, he said, look, you're done. So I didn't even make it out of the second quarter, really. It was that painful. And I'm not sure why anybody would be possessed to play a game like that down in South Louisiana. Yeah.
So here's the deal, like, and it's just silly. The conference TV package then, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, like, they played this game for TV. TV dictated that kick time, and there might have been three stations in America carrying that game, and who knows where they were. So the thing I remember about that, I remember seeing, yeah, 117 was the temperature on the turf. Their band, Lafayette's band, showed up in shorts and T-shirts. So they weren't in uniform, nor should they have been.
Did they make it all the way
no,
through the game?
Third quarter, they nope. left. The band got up and left.
The band quit.
And I'm telling you this, Wright Waters, bless his heart, better be glad he did not see Steve Roberts that afternoon, because there would have been a tussle. And understandably so. It was dangerous. But fortunately, everybody came out of it, and here we are talking about it.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea, customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with Taylor Stockamer here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. The 2011 season is the season that turned everything around with this program. You win the game at Western Kentucky. That's kind of the turning point that's mentioned so often. And you go on to win the conference after that. But that began a stretch of nine straight winning seasons that included nine straight bowl games, five conference championships. But you go back to that 2011 season, Stock. What was it that made that team so special?
You know, we often talk about this, because the 2010 roster was substantially similar to that 2011 roster. And we went 4-8 in 2010 and 10-2, 10-3 in 2011. And really, the biggest part in my mind was just the regime change. Freeze stayed on as an offensive play caller, moved his position and head coach, but it was really just bringing in some fresh faces that were coaches. And the mentality changed a little bit. It's kind of hard to say we can point to one thing. Defensively, we had a different defense, and albeit they were monsters on defense. App and I joke all the time that we were very confident in our lack of production and offense, because we knew that defense was going to get the ball back for us. And that really helped us a lot throughout some of those close games. And as you go through the season, you know, you mentioned Western Kentucky. I've got a funny story about that. That was a crazy game, a stalled fourth down on their part. We go down, we score with seconds left to win the game. It was exciting. I remember walking back in the locker room and everybody joyful that we won, but we're looking at each other thinking, man, we can barely beat Western Kentucky. And they were terrible last year. I think their only win may have been us in the overtime game. And so we didn't have the confidence that we ended the season with. Now, at the time, we didn't know that Western Kentucky was going to continue to win every single game they played the remainder of the year and turn out to be a good team, but it still shook us a little bit. And then we went down to Louisiana Monroe.
Yep.
We'd never won back-to-back road conference games, and I don't know what the stat was, but it had been years. And so Freeze made us a deal. He said, you know what? We'll have a celebration. We'll do something special for you if we go down and win Louisiana Monroe. We beat Louisiana Monroe, block punt, Kelsey McCray with a big interception return. And at that point, we started to get a little confident. We go and play Florida International. We win that game. We play North Texas. We beat the crap out of North Texas. And at that point, we developed this confidence that we may not have had in 2010 or 2009. We sat and looked at each other and said, hey, we're actually pretty good. And that kind of rolled into playing at FAU. We beat them pretty badly. The big game against Louisiana Lafayette, they had a very good team. We had a very good team. Went and played at Middle Tennessee State, beat Troy. And by the time Troy and Middle Ten rolled around, we felt like we were world beaters, that we could beat almost anybody that we played.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way at the end of the year. And then 2012 rolls around, and you win another conference championship under Coach Malzahn. You talk about how well the team was playing at the end of 2011, but you know, that 2012 season, I just remember how unstoppable that offense seemed to be at the end of the year. I mean, you guys could name the number offensively the last half of the season. Did it feel that way to you guys as you were playing?
So that was a little bit of a different scenario for us. 2011 was about building confidence and proving to ourselves as well as everybody else that we were a good enough team to be where we wanted to be. In 2012, we knew we were good. You know, we had different offensive philosophy, different coaches dealing with that, but our core group of players, we were still the same, and we knew we were good. We just knew we had to put in the work. There were some pieces that we were still trying to figure out, and obviously we got J.D. McKissic, which helps a ton, great player. And, you know, as the offense moved along throughout the years, we were still trying to figure out where do we put which piece in order to be successful. And obviously as J.D. emerged throughout the year and getting us in the right position as far as our receivers go, because from a receiver standpoint, Malzahn's offense and Freeze's offense were completely different, and one was not better than the other, but it was just different. And so once we got everything into a rhythm, we started to roll. And it was probably about South Alabama or Louisiana Lafayette when we went down there in October and on national television and played really well there. Once that game kind of happened, when we got the feel, or the infamous game where Frankie Jackson ran the same play 8 times in a row and we still scored on it. Once we got that confidence built up in this offense and we knew we were good, again, we started to steamroll everybody. I believe we killed North Texas and then beat Louisiana Monroe badly on the Thursday night game. Went to Troy, scored a lot of points. That game was very hectic. And then the Middle Tennessee game, that was probably my favorite game I've ever played in.
I guess. I mean, I know you never played in a game where you left the field and thought, we might have just played the perfect game.
So it's funny you say that. I think our offensive grades were out of this world the first 7 drives, first 8 drives, until we started taking everybody out.
Yeah,
we were almost perfect on our execution. And that is something that Coach Lashley and Coach Malzahn always strived on, was can we get all 11 players to do their job every play? And that's very tough statistically to do, to have 11 people do everything right once, let alone the 72 plays or 80 plays or 60 plays you play in a game. That game, everything worked perfectly. Everybody blocked well. Everybody ran well. Everybody caught well. Defense played out of their minds. It was just the perfect culmination of our ASU career.
Well, you say culmination. I'm going to disagree a little bit, because you still had one more game after that. And the one thing that you hadn't done until that point is win a bowl game. Everybody knows Coach Malzahn took the Auburn job right after the Middle Tennessee game. So you're playing with an interim head coach for a second straight season and trying to find a way to beat a nationally ranked Kent State team at the GoDaddy Bowl. And I remember your post-game radio interview that you did with us, and just how excited you were. It just seemed like a moment of pure joy that you were able to end your career with a win at that bowl game.
That was a wonderful experience. It truly was. What made it better was being in the same position a year ago that time, and knowing we have a great team and having such a successful run during a season. In the previous year, we were stripped of all of our coaches. We're almost lost in bowl preparation. We didn't have enough coaches to go around. Trying to herd everybody was like herding cats. It was just difficult. And we had the players and we had the play calls. We just didn't execute, and we needed more guidance. And so fast forward to that 2013 bowl game, we knew what we needed to do. And we sat there and we told ourselves, we're not going to make the same mistakes we made last year. We're going to win this game. We're going to do everything it takes to win that game. And so moving into that scenario, I didn't feel like there was any way we were going to lose. And winning the way we won and who we beat and it being prime time just added such a special place in my heart because of what had happened the previous year.
What did the, now you look back those 13 years you talked about, what did the adult Taylor Stockamer learn from going a couple of years and then things not going well and having to work through a leadership change? And then you turn right around and things went real, real well, so well that you had to go through another leadership change. I mean, you look back, like what did you learn from that stretch of those coaching changes?
You have to learn to adapt. And it's funny, I get asked frequently and have for the last 13 years, what was the difference between Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn? You know, which one did you like better? I field all those questions and it's always interesting. I give the same response. It was such a night and day difference between the two coaches, not good, not bad, but a night and day difference. And the way we did things in 2011 was different than how we did it in 2010. And it was vastly different than how we did it in 2012. And so learning to take our abilities and our wants and desires to be successful and adapt that to a different vision and a different mentality and a different regime was very, very difficult at the time. I remember going through spring football in 2012 thinking, you know, why are we doing things this way? Why are we getting up at 4 a.m. to have practice at 6 a.m. in the spring? And then on our off days, we have to be there at 6:30 to go through walkthroughs. You know, it's not like we were 1-11 the previous year. We were 10-2 and lost a bowl game. We are a good team. And buying into that, buying into what they were selling and becoming adaptive to everything that they wanted to do. Specifically, there was a play in spring practice. I remember App had a lot of freedoms under Coach Hugh Freeze, and a corner came down to press coverage me, and App changed the play, threw me a go route. We caught a touchdown in practice. It was good. That's the outcome that you'd like. Offenses to score touchdowns, big explosive plays. Well, after the play, Malzahn came up to Ryan and me and said, why did you do that? Ryan said, hey, this is what I saw. You know, I had confidence that we could get it done. He said, but that's not the play I called. We need to run that play I called. And he was right. And he was building his offense. But, you know, in my mind at the time, I was sitting there thinking, well, that's what we wanted to do. And we had that freedom last year, which we didn't have this year. But looking back, I understand what Malzahn was wanting to do. And I needed to learn to adapt to follow the rules and do the things we needed to do in his eyes to be successful.
What's so amazing is just how close you guys have stayed through all these years. We mentioned 13 years for you, but you mentioned App and how you guys are still close. I know we're all friends with Philip Butterfield and DeMario, and you guys, I know, keep that group text very active, but I think that says a lot about, you know, just the whole camaraderie with everybody in the program back then, that you guys still are as tight as you are.
I'm very thankful for that. And as you mentioned, there's a couple of group texts out there where we're all a part of and having a good time. And then there's one in particular that's got players from before my time and players a little bit after my time. And it's great to hear from these guys and talk about anything and everything under the sun. And I feel for some of the newer players because a lot of these guys we spent 5 years with or 4 years with or prolonged periods of our lifetime where we were really growing up to become men. And, you know, now you see guys that are in 1 year, out 1 year, and kind of hate it because once it's all said and done, you know, there will be a time that nobody can play anymore, whether it's you go play 8 years in the league or your last snap is your last game, your senior year. Having these relationships afterwards is very meaningful. And like you said, I have a very close relationship with Philip, talk to Philip almost on a daily basis. Wouldn't want to not have that relationship.
One of the hats you wear now, still connected with your alma maters, you're on the Letter Winners Club's board of directors, and it was you who got to call a guy you mentioned earlier, Kelsey McCray. You got to call Kelsey and invite him into the Hall of Honor. What's it like making those calls?
So I was awarded the opportunity last year to call JD. Very close to JD, played with JD for a couple of years. Love the experience. And he was elated when I called him, almost to the extent he didn't believe me at first. He thought I was prank calling him. And so this year, when I had the opportunity, I specifically requested it. I said, hey, I want to call Kelsey. I want to be the one that gives him the news. I don't know if you all know Kelsey, but he's extremely laid back. And I hadn't talked to Kelsey in probably a couple of years. And I called him and, you know, asked him how he's doing. And I'm walking through, you know, his stages of life. And he'd mentioned, he said, man, I really want to get back to ASU. And I said, well, hey, I've got something for you. And I told him, and he just went silent for a little bit. And I panicked. I was like, oh no, either he doesn't believe me, or worst case scenario was running through my head. And then he, in Kelsey McCray fashion, he calmly said, man, that is wonderful news. You just made my entire week. I really appreciate that. I loved it. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I loved being able to call and congratulate my former teammates on successful careers, you know, in college and post-college.
We mentioned at the top, you still stay very close with this program. And I know you followed the path of the last few years and what Butch Jones has done, just kind of rebuilding this program his way, going from 2 wins to 3 wins to 6 wins to now 8 wins and a bowl victory last year. So you've got to be proud of what you've seen the last few years. And how much are you looking forward to the season kicking off this week?
I'm thrilled. I really am. And talking with Coach Jones and then talking with Ryan and some other former teammates that are college coaches now, I'm not sure how they do it. It is incredibly hard to build a roster and build a team. And then with the induction of NIL and all of the other revenue share and transfer portal, it makes things so much more difficult than it was when I was playing. And so anybody that can go to a program where we can't shell out $25 million and build the program, my hat is off to them. That is an incredibly hard feat. And to see it year after year after year, it's really hard to do. And I don't think these mid-major teams get enough credit, specifically Butch Jones. I mean, you have to re-recruit your own players and recruit new players and have to find some source of income or revenue to bring what you want to the table, including keeping coaches.
The matchup coming up in Little Rock next week. You're right there in the middle of it all, living in Central Arkansas. So I know that as a player, especially back in 2011, 2012, being an in-state kid, you would have loved to have played the Razorbacks back then. But how much are you enjoying the buzz? How much are you looking forward to the game at War Memorial Stadium next week?
I could not be more envious of their opportunity. I really couldn't. You know, that's something that we wished and hoped for, and it was never in the cards in the 2011 season nor the 2012 season. I don't believe they made a bowl game that year. And we just wanted the opportunity so badly. And it wasn't just me. It wasn't even our in-state kids. It was the sense that we had, you know, we were always the little brother to the school across the state. And so we just wanted that opportunity. Now that it's come to fruition, I am really excited. My family is coming down. I can actually almost walk to the stadium from my house. I've had this game on the calendar ever since it was announced. And so I'm overly thrilled that it's being played. I really hope we have a good showing, and I really hope there's another opportunity in the future.
Well, I'm hoping you get to talk a lot of trash after it's over.
Me too. That's at work, I'm surrounded by many Hog fans, many, many Hog fans. And being in Little Rock, I'm surrounded by many, many Hog fans. I'm very thankful that the managing partner of our law firm is Price Gardner, who is a former ASU football player and on the board of trustees. So there are a few of us here at the firm that hold it down for ASU, and I'm really hoping that come the following Monday, we can our few can be really excited.
Well, we appreciate you holding it down for us. And, man, this was fun. I'm glad we got a chance to do this. Can't wait to see you coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. I appreciate this opportunity. It's been a lot of fun.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to KavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by Kavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Let's talk A-State soccer. They had an interesting week. Hosted Stephen F. Austin last Thursday. They were down 2-0 at the half, but they rallied. They came back, scored two goals in the final 20 minutes to earn a 2-2 draw. That was good to see.
Yep. And it was Stephen F. Austin was a conference champion last year. I mean, I was talking to Coach Dooley about them, you know, going into that match. He knew it was going to be a tough challenge. Yeah. So down 2-0 at the break and came back to get a draw.
Then Sunday at Oklahoma State, ended up losing the match 3-2. Hung tough, but it was interesting how it played out. Down 3-0. One of the goals just happened to have SportsCenter on Monday morning, and the number 3 play was an incredible kick that they were able to make. So that was one of Oklahoma State's 3 goals. But you know, our girls came back, scored 2 goals in the final 10 minutes to get to within 1. They're now 1-1-2 on the season.
Yeah, and I've talked with Coach again. You know, they did that, I think, in an exhibition match at Little Rock, scored late to tie it. At UT Martin, scored late to tie it. Stephen F. Austin got 2 late goals to tie that match. So
they know there. We can score in the first 70 minutes
I think
or
that's
so.
The catch. I mean, he likes the fact that this team has scrapped late in matches, maybe more so than other teams have in the past. Now the message is, hey, okay, you don't have to. Like, right, you can just stay out of that situation.
Well, they've only got one match this week. They'll be in Conway Thursday night taking on UCA. Volleyball team will be in action this week, hoping to get off to a good start at the Georgia Tech Classic in Atlanta. Volleyball, of course, the defending Sun Belt Conference champions. And they've got a tough draw this weekend. They'll play Ole Miss Friday at 2, Wofford Saturday at 2, and then they'll take on the host team, Georgia Tech, Sunday at 1. They did announce the preseason all-conference teams last week. Both Dadriana Kale and Caitlin Whitlock were named, both former podcast guests.
Yeah, they took the first 3 sets. They ended up playing a 4th set just because Saturday in the exhibition against North Alabama. But first 3 sets, A-State swept through those. Coach Gerwig, we knew he threw a tough schedule in front of this bunch. I mean, even next week when they get home, it's an SEC team coming in here for 2 matches. So you got the bulk of a team back that won a regular season championship last year. So he scheduled accordingly.
Cross country will open their season this week as well. They'll be in Memphis at the City Auto Memphis Twilight Cross Country Classic. And
that name as long as the course.
Yeah, that's almost ran out of breath saying that. That leads us to football. Season opener Saturday at 6. SEMO in town, a really good SEMO team who was actually ranked for 11 weeks last year. They climbed to as high as number 6 in the FCS polls a season ago. They won 9 games, so this is a good program. They've been to the FCS playoffs 4 of the last 7 years, so this is a good test for us coming up this weekend.
And the kind of team will be excited to come down here, right? I mean, they're just a couple hours up the road. Maybe geographically their closest FBS opportunity. I don't know if it's closer to Columbia or not, but either way, they've got guys who I'm sure at somewhere point in line were probably recruited some by Arkansas State. And so you got to mind your P's and Q's. I mean, we found that out last year, right? Not that you didn't know what UCA was too, but I mean, you don't have to look back far. The coaches don't have to go back far in the archives to remind these guys how ready you better be against these good FCS opponents.
I'm really looking forward to seeing our guys, and this is the first opportunity to do that. I think our fans are too.
Matter of fact, while we were talking to Stockhammer, you know, I called up the weather. Now it's showing the high Saturday is 80.
On August 30th, no less.
Unbelievable.
Can't beat it. Can't wait to see everybody out at football. I do want to ask before we get out of here, you brought a bag in the studio. So what's in this bag?
I told you could ask me what's in this bag.
Yeah, what's in there?
And I've told some people this was coming, but I didn't say it here. I wanted to wait until I actually had it in hand so we could talk about it. But we mentioned it on the podcast a couple weeks ago about how one of the neatest things that happened in that weekend or happened in a long time was back a few weekends ago. I'm going to get the date here. August 9th, when the Marlins of Miami were playing a doubleheader in Atlanta. So they called up Tyler Zuber.
Yeah.
Making him the fourth major league team he's been a part of. But right off the bat, the first game he was called up with the Marlins, he came in to pitch the eighth inning. His catcher was Liam Hicks from Arkansas State.
Incredible.
I mean, first time we'd imagine, first time two A-State products have been in the same game, much less on the same team, much less...
Same battery.
The battery.
Yeah.
So as soon as that game ended, because you didn't know, like, what are they going to do with Zuber? Like, you never... I mean, hopefully they weren't just bringing him up to be the 27th guy on a doubleheader day, and that has proven to not be the case. But, I mean, it went kind of after... You know, something to mark that day. And so what's in the bag is this ball from the eighth inning of that game that was used for four pitches, the first of which, bottom of the eighth inning, strikeout swinging, pitched by Tyler Zuber, caught by Liam Hicks. This is the baseball.
How do you get that? Are you serious? That's the ball?
That is the ball.
Well, we got to get him to autograph it.
Now, that'll happen. So how we get it is just kind of just knowing that, you know, Major League Baseball, we all know that basically if a ball hits the dirt, right, they take it out of play.
Yeah.
Well, now when they take a ball out of play, there's someone there to authenticate it. And every time a ball comes out of play, they authenticate. They put one of these holograms on it. It's got a number. They enter it into the system. They know exactly what happened with that ball. And I kind of know when they did that, even on that Saturday night, I reached out to the Braves Authentics and know who I was, what I was after, and why. And I got just a form response first. But then maybe even on the Sunday, I got an email back from somebody saying, hey, Brad, appreciate you reaching out. Here's what we got. These balls right here were pitched by Zuber, caught by Hicks. And maybe like four of them, but this one was used for four pitches, including a strikeout. And I said, that's the one. Ship it to me.
Man, that is so cool. I'm so proud of you for thinking of that, man. That is awesome. And I can't wait for you to get both of those guys to sign it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, seeing them. And, they've hooked up again. I think at a game in Boston, Liam was catching, and Zuber threw, I think, 2 1/3 scoreless. So they've hooked up again, but there wasn't going to be another first time. And so I wanted something from the first time.
What a great, great souvenir. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks to our buddy Taylor Stockamer. Sure, there's some footballs around that would be pretty valuable that he caught for touchdowns over the years.
I think there are a few of those.
Appreciate him joining us, and we always appreciate you listening. We'll be back with you next week, hopefully talking about the first A-State football win of the season. That's on our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Kavanaugh Auto Group.